Okay, I've hit the record button, so this call is now being recorded. My name is Yara Stark, and I have Gideon Shawick on the line with me. Hi, Gideon.
Hi, Yaro. How you doing?
Welcome to our Blog Mastermind and Become a Blogger and Membership Site Mastermind group call. It's January 14th of 2009, and we're going to get started. For those people who have not made it onto a call before, just some brief instructions. If you would like to ask a question, all you have to do is press *9. And what that does, it raises your hand in the system. Now you can press *9 either on your telephone pad or if you're calling in through Skype, you'll find a dial pad in your Skype software. You may need to click a button to open it up, but there's a standard 9-key dial pad. You just press *9 on that and you'll, sorry, a 12-key dial pad, and you'll see what you'll be notified verbally. A nice lady will tell you that your hand's raised. And what we see on our end is a little hand on our control panel. We click that, and that unmutes your line. The lady says that you can ask your question, and you just start talking. So what you can do right now, if you are ready to go, just press *9. And one other resource as well, this call has a text-based chat room running concurrently, which you can find, and you've probably seen it already, at the entrepreneurs-journey.com/teleconferences page. That's the page with the information on the call. We activate the live chat room during the live calls, and that just gives you an opportunity to type in the text. And what you can do there, since this might be a slightly slower call than usual, I think Gideon and I will be capable of taking questions from the chat room if you don't feel like talking on the live call. Or, of course, you can report any problems you're having or just talk about any subjects related to what we're discussing during the call. And actually, we find it very helpful if people recommend resources if they have any insight and input into the questions being asked. Because obviously Gideon and I don't know everything, so it's fantastic if everyone can share what they know. And one more thing, since this call is being recorded, if you don't want your name going out to the other members of the program, I suggest you use a fake name or don't ask a question. But of course, I encourage you to ask questions because it makes it better for everyone, and we'd love to help you. So we're welcoming any questions regarding blogging, membership sites, video production, internet marketing in general. And we'll do our best to help you no matter any type of questions. So with that all out of the way, we'll dive into the first of the questions. Ready to go, Gideon?
I'm ready.
Okay, here we go.
Hello, it's Anastasia here. I think my nickname on the forum is Dolce Vita. I had a couple of questions. That was one, and then we just take it from there. It's probably the one that worries or interests me at the moment the most. I would love to start writing a couple of articles where you do, you know, your top 10 or the best list or, you know, the list type of articles. But because I'm writing a lot about coaching and coaching skills, managers coach, MBTI, personality types, I'm just struggling to find or to think of where to go and look for the information that would allow me to compile those lists. Or is the top 10 is just a catchphrase and I just can write down whatever I can think of that I can present in bullet points and call it top 10? Or should I be aiming for more and actually go and try to find out information that indicates what I'm talking about is top 10 in the world or in the industry? And if so, then could you give any recommendation where I could go and look for that type of research or whatever that might be?
I can jump in first on that one, Gideon. Is it Donna? Sorry?
Sorry?
Is your name Donna?
Anastasia.
Anastasia. Sorry about that. I didn't hear catch your name at the beginning.
No, I just said my nickname on the forum is Dolce.
Yes, I got that one. Dolce Vita. Anastasia. Yeah. Okay, with the top 10 technique, well, let me ask you a question first. Who is your target audience? Like, what are you trying to provide to them?
Right now, my target audience is the wall because nobody's talking to me.
Well, that's not true. You have an intended audience that is not there yet. So who's your intended audience?
So the intended audience would be corporate employees and probably junior to middle-level management.
Okay,
but it's all about corporate people rather than people interested in something. And I think that's my current mindset. I might need to change it, to be honest. But
well, could you explain the reason why they're reading your blog then? What kind of information do they, like, is there a problem they're trying to solve by reading your blog?
Thursday, yes. I started getting emails as of this morning, to be honest, and those emails are from friends of mine whom I send a link and ask them to read and come up with questions that they may have. And what it looks like, the lot of questions that I got this morning were all around how do I make people work better and, you know, how do I make people do things without yelling at them? Somebody send me a question. And I think a lot of questions will be evolving around that. How do I deal with a particular situation? What can you recommend? And I would always be recommending from the point of view of how you use coaching skills for that or any particular knowledge that I would otherwise recommend using if I would be consulting them in the real life.
Okay. I would like to see you over time refine that a little bit more so you have an idea of the exact person you're talking to. At the moment, it sounds like you're sort of talking to the HR manager within a company or maybe someone in a senior position where they're a boss of other people and they're trying to manage their employees, which is fine, but you need to really define that because you'll have trouble coming up with topics, which is exactly what you're having trouble with now. Because I could, you know, if we said we're targeting the HR manager in small sized companies of, you know, 50 employees or less, and they're looking for ways to encourage their employees to get more done for their company. And maybe it's not just necessarily the HR manager, it could be the boss, so the small business owner. Now, in that case, the type of top 10 you could actually do would be something along the lines of, you know, top 10 techniques to motivate your employees to do more. Something like that. And that doesn't necessarily have to be about a person. That can be specifically about coaching techniques that you know work. And that sort of thing can spread within the small business, blogosphere or website community. The important thing there is the ideas in the top 10 tips are actually quite significant. They're not necessarily widely known and written about on other blogs, you know, already many, many times. And that can be a great strategy for a top 10, in which case, you know, I wouldn't focus on personality top 10. You know, you could talk about the top 10, you know, corporate CEOs, but that's really not the kind of top 10. Since we're talking about coaching skills in a business context, I would be sticking to, actually teaching how to and give techniques away within your list articles. So, that could be an idea there.
I think I'm making the typical mistake of, you know, of a beginner where I try to serve everybody without concentrating on somebody specifically. I'm trying to catch too many birds at the same time.
Anastasia, I might have another idea for you as well, but I think once again it'll probably be more useful once you have a clearer idea of who your intended audience is. And that is that you simply go and ask people, and say if you're already working in a corporate environment or if you have some sort of contact with more corporate people, you just simply go and ask them, you know, ask them what are the things they want to learn about, what are the topics they want to read about on your blog. And often that could give you just some ideas of things you could talk about. And, once you have the right kind of topic, then you could create some sort of a top 10 list out of that and ask people, you know, what would you rate as the top 10 things in this area or in this topic, you know, so and making use of other people and getting those ideas from other people essentially. Are you currently working for yourself or are you in a corporate environment?
Well, I started working for myself a year and a half ago, but it's the same project for the year and a half. So it feels like a corporate environment. I'm coming from a corporate environment. I'm an ex-management consultant, and I do consultancy as I've done it before. So nothing changed really apart from, well, the paycheck.
Okay. Right. So you still have contact with people in bigger companies. Okay, that's great. So you have access. I mean, the way that I look at it is you have access to all these people that you can simply just go and talk to, which is be a big benefit. I used to be in a corporate environment as well, and I just love the fact that I could just walk up to anybody and ask them a question. And you could disguise it as a question that relates to your work, you know, and that can help you come up with that very, very quickly and very easily.
Yeah, I think my biggest difficulties, and as you pointed out, right, and it to identify whom I'm actually talking to. Trying to guess which audience would be the best instead of just talking to people I want to talk to.
I think another thing you could do, Anastasia, is to look at the things that where people complain most in a corporate environment like that, and that's often where you'll find your best opportunities. So if there's a big problem and a lot of people are talking about it and complaining about it, nobody's really doing anything about it, you know, there's a golden opportunity there for you to write about it. And these people can be your first visitors to your blog or your first clients. You can tell them, look, I've come up with a few suggestions here on my blog. Go and check it out. And then you can start a discussion that way.
Yeah,
just an idea.
That's a really good one. Yeah, it's a really good one. My husband is an HR business partner on a very, very large company. So actually I cannot pick his brain about what his employees are complaining about all the time.
Yeah. Absolutely, and something else that works well as well that could put you in quite a nice position to be able to allow you to do this without people turning away from it is to act as a reporter. And so you walk around with either your little camera or your audio recording equipment, and you get people to agree to do a little interview with you, and you basically just ask them all these questions, and as you go through the process, you'll start seeing patterns and the same sort of problems and questions coming up, and that could possibly become part of your top 10 list or part of your content later on, and as you interview these people, think about how you can give them something back. You could that would make them feel good about themselves, or if they've got a website, you can link back to their website. Think about what's in it for them as well when you do conduct these sort of interviews.
Mm-hmm. That's a great idea.
Okay.
Thank you.
No problem.
Keep me going for another month at least.
Great, Anastasia. Yeah, hopefully you'll be able to refine your topic and know your target audience, and it will become that much easier for you. So what we'll do is, if you want to ask more questions, you're welcome to. Like I said, it's probably not going to be a super active call, but we'll just give some other people a chance.
Exactly. And I have another question that I would like to ask, but I'll wait for the next time when my turn is.
Okay. Just press *9 again, and I'll see your hand. Okay. Thank you.
Yara, I just noticed there's a question in the little chat room.
Quicker than me, I was going to say that. I was going to ask you the questions. It's a question for you, Gideon.
So, Do you want to read it out?
So from Morgan. Morgan asks in the forum, I joined Blog Talk Radio and have seen the player you use, such as below, which I assume she's referring to the teleconferences page, I'm not sure, to play MP3s. All right, yes, the one I've got on my blog. And I've seen it on other blogs as well. How can I go about implementing the same type of player for playing MP3s? So some sort of player to plug into your blog so you can play or stream MP3s live from your blog.
Okay, good question. There's a very neat little, I think it is a plugin that allows you to stream audio straight from your blog. It essentially provides all the code for you that puts that little nice little player on your blog. Now I'm just trying to look for the name of that little plugin. Do you remember what that is called, Yara? You still there, Yara? Oh, looks like. Oh, I've either. Hello. I'm not sure if I'm online yet. Still anymore. Oh dear. I think I've been lost. If you're still listening, just experiencing some technical problems here. I'm not sure if I'm still on, or if Yaro is still on, or if he's off, or if I'm off. let's just quickly try and find out where that is. Just give me a minute, and we'll sort that out. Okay, maybe a way to test this is Okay, so people can still hear me. All right, so I'm still on. Great. Okay, I found the website for this particular plugin. The plugin is called One Pixel Out, or it's called the Audio Player for, I think it's just called Audio Player WordPress. So if you type in the words MP3 plugin for WordPress, it will bring up the first result on Google. Will be for that particular plugin that you can then install on your blog. And that page provides you with all the information you need to be able to play those same kind of audio files on your blog. So that's pretty straightforward. I mean, of course, the back of that is you'll need to upload your audio in MP3 format onto your server into a particular folder. And then when you reference it using the code that they provide you on this page, it'll create a little audio player for you. People visit your blog, and you're all go. So I noticed Yaro is active in the chat room. So I'm just gonna let him know through there as well that I'm still talking.
I'm still talking.
All right, Yaro's back as well. Okay, great. Not sure what happened there, Yaro, but glad to have you back. Okay, so I hope that answers the question. Just once again, if you want to find that plugin, the words to type into a Google search is MP3 plugin for WordPress, and the first result that should come up will be the onepixelout.net website with the WordPress audio plugin. So go and check that out.
And,
okay.
Just, I think Morgan's also curious of my player on the Entrepreneur's Journey blog. That's actually called the Wimpy Player. That's W-I-M-P-Y, Wimpy Player. And that's not a plugin. That's actually a JavaScript tech thing that my tech guy put on for me. So I saw it on Steve Pavlina's blog, and I wanted to get the similar thing on my blog. So I had my tech person... we basically purchased the rights to use that little script and stuck it on my blog in the footer there. So if you scroll down the end of my blog, you'll see it. And I think it's pretty neat. So,
yeah, I'm just I've just submitted that link to the chat room as well for that particular plugin. So if people are interested in checking it out, they can just click on that link and it'll take them straight to the website.
Okay. Awesome. I've got a hand up, so we'll jump to that one. But there's also one other question from John in the chat room. But let's do the live call first.
Sounds good.
Hi, Gideon.
Hi.
Hi, Ian McKay, Liverpool.
Hi, Ian. How you doing?
I'm okay. I'm going to be mostly listening here. I just wanted to make sure that I'm getting the hang of the technology. I'm an old dog trying to learn new tricks. I'm 70 in a couple of weeks, but I'm keeping up with things. I'm about to start my blog on, I suppose you'd call it health and well-being. I think they call it in America. I originally did biochemistry in university a long, long time ago. And I'm very interested in herbal medicine. And that's going to be my target audience. However, I'm jumping the gun a little bit here. But I'd be interested in knowing how I would, once I've got the technical side of my blog sorted out and got it up and running, how do I publicize it best?
Very good question, Ian. It's probably not a question I could answer within in 5 minutes' time, but I guess we can give you some pointers that you can look forward to already. Just before I get into it, I think Yara will help out with this question as well, but we will be covering this particular topic of how to get the word out for your blog, basically how to market your blog in some lessons coming up for the Become a Blogger Premium course. So we'll cover that in a lot more detail, but I guess just to give you an overview, there are a number of things that you can use to drive traffic to your blogs. I mean, that's what it's ultimately about. And I mean, traffic comes in at least three different forms. The first one is where you pay for it, and you're using things like Google's AdWords program. And you pay per click advertising. That's one example of that. Then you get free advertising, which is at least free traffic, and that's essentially where you try and use search engine optimization to try and get traffic from the search engines like Google. And so this is just the normal organic search engine traffic that you're trying to get. And that's the great thing about blogs. They are really good for that kind of traffic. If you structure your blog correctly and you use the correct keywords and you've got the right plugins installed, that should help you rank better in the search engines. And the third one is where you borrow traffic, if I remember right. And that's where you essentially hook up with other people who already has a following, and you essentially get a slice of their following coming to your blog. So something typical like that would be where you join up with another person with a very big email list, and you do a promotion together with them, and they send you traffic to your blog, and in return you give them a share of any sales that are made on from if you have a product promotion, for example. So that's just a really, really quick overview of the sort of traffic that you can get to your blog. There's a lot more to it. And Yara, I'm not sure if you want to add, you can probably add a lot more to that.
I can. It's Ian, right? Is that who we're talking to?
Yeah.
Hi, Ian. There's one technique that I used early on, and if you do some research, everyone will tell you the same thing about this, and that's comment marketing, you know, which is leaving comments on other people's blog posts. Now, that's not a high return activity. You know, you can spend hours doing that and only develop a small amount of traffic back to your blog. But it's a great way to get started because it forces you to interact and read the other blogs in your industry. So, you know, by doing that, you will discover who you should be following and maybe even start forming relationships with them. So what I recommend to people is go to blogs, pick three blogs of similar style to your own blog, so a similar topic, maybe the same topic. Make sure they have traffic. They don't, maybe not the very, very level one superhero blogs because it's hard to get their attention, but certainly, you know, people who have 500 readers, 1,000 readers, that sort of level is a good place to target, and start leaving impactful comments in response to their articles. And when I say impactful, I mean, you know, don't just say, thanks, that's a great article. You know, throw your opinion back at them, you know, tell a story from your own experience that's relevant to their article.
And ask open questions so they can't just say yes or no.
Right. And it's especially good if you can ask, you know, questions that clearly are intelligent questions that they're very much interested in, because they may start a dialogue with you there in the comments. So, and that will return traffic to your blog because people can click the link in the comment you made and bring you back, bring back some readers. That's the thing that doesn't do a lot, though. You can get a trickle, 5 readers a day, 10 readers a day. But if you keep hitting one blog every day and every post they make you comment on, the person writing that blog will start to get to know you. And what can happen then is you can email them and maybe do a guest article for them, and that in turn can deliver more traffic. If you have a chance, I've got a podcast I've just published on my blog, an interview with Caroline Middlebrook. I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to that, but if you can, she talks about her early days doing comment marketing, and she had some fantastic results doing that. So it's a free download. Just head to my blog, about a 45-minute interview with her, and yeah, that's a good one to grab for that specific technique.
Okay, will do. Thanks, Yara. Thank you.
No problem. Thanks, Ian.
Thanks, Ian.
Okay. Now, there's a couple more questions that popped up in the forum before I move back on to the raised hands. What I might do is just go through a few of these quickly because I don't want to neglect the text questions I saved up from the forums last time as well. So they are coming a little hard and fast in the chat room. So Gideon, you might want to just grab those few in there just to cover. But let me just address these. I've got 3 questions that came through in the forums. I'll just quickly respond to them so that I can say I did it. I want to get through that. So this is a question from James. He talked about, he said, recently I was listening to you talk about hiring other people to write for your blog. he'd like to be able to do that in the future himself. He enjoys writing for his own blogs, but he doesn't think he's too bad at it. But the thing that really slows him down is the research for each post. Almost every post he writes, he does a fair bit of research for it. So his question is, what would you recommend for someone who would like more help with the research and the best options for hiring someone, and are there ways to speed up the process? So, James, the best way to hire someone for research purposes is to go to an outsourcing site. I think, in fact, there's a thread in our forum right now where someone asked a similar question, and Blaine had a great response, which essentially went like this. So what you do is you head to a site like Elance and you lodge a job there, Scriptlance or Guru.com, and other alternative sites, and you say, I'm looking for basically a virtual assistant to do research for me. And what you do is you put the job up there and what the details are and how much you expect to pay. And, you know, research is not a high paying role. It's sort of a $15 an hour at top kind of thing because, you know, it's research on the internet. And what you do is you give everyone who applies, who seems reasonably sound, a trial job. So have them research something, and that will give you a chance to assess their ability to do that research for you. And I know a lot of bloggers write topics that require research, and it's great to have quotes and, you know, sound knowledgeable in your specific topic area. Now, in my case, I often don't need to do too much research because I'm passively observing and digesting other people's content or coming up with my own ideas. But, you know, Al Borz from caradvice.com.au, he's a great example. He has to research cars. So that's the sort of thing you can go to and get outsourced. And any of those outsourcing sites will find you, you know, it's a very common thing to outsource. So, James, if you have any more on that, please jump on one of the calls with us and we can continue to discuss it. Jeff asks, I have a website that I'm going to convert into a blog early next year that covers a niche in the entertainment industry. I believe this niche is big enough to garner 3 blogs. I already have 2 additional prime domain names lined up. One of the domain names just sits out there with the one page I created for it, and it does well in converting AdSense traffic, but not enough for me to quit my job. My questions are, 1, should I just concentrate on building 3 blogs or just have 1 for now? And 2, should I try to promote the second website with greater traffic in the hopes of getting more AdSense money? Okay, so Jeff, I think I like the idea of focusing on something that works. That's always a good idea, and there's almost always leverage and, you know, money on the table that you're not collecting. And if you could just do a few steps, you could actually generate more income from that. So I would suggest you go for the lowest hanging fruit there and try and maximize your income. You can, you know, concentrate on building 3 blogs, but people usually do that because they haven't found one that's successful yet. And if you have one that's already successful, you know, why not develop that to the point where it is making your full-time income? So any additional projects you do can be almost relaxed. You know, you can invest time slowly and know that your base income is already covered from that one successful blog if you do want to branch out. So that's the way I'd approach it, Jeff. I made the mistake in the past of going after multiple ideas when the one idea that's working is sitting there, you know, asking for my attention. And many times I've had to, you know, start something, realize it was a mistake, stop it, and go back to what's working. So I recommend you focus on where the money is now. And I'll get to the live questions. One more I've got from the forum, which is from Rick Resch from Ferrari Dreams. Hi, Yaro. I have finished my business timeline life story, and I was wondering if I can post it under the tab About that is running along the top of my WordPress blog, or is that where you post a summary about yourself and you put the story in the regular post area in the sections like you did with Entrepreneur's Journey? And he goes on to wish me a Merry Christmas, so you can see how long it's been since I've answered this question. So, Rick, we do cover this. It's definitely covered in Blog Mastermind, and to be very clear, if you're in that program, Blog Mastermind, you're just about to cover that as you get through to the content modules. And I've got a couple of presentations there which will pretty much answer this question. But if you go to my blog, you can see how I do it. The About page is designed to do something else. It's not meant to be your life story, and I would link to the life story from your About page. But you should use your About page just to have a quick impact with dot points to explain the benefits of reading your blog, and then link to the life story for people who really want to spend some time reading a longer article to get to know you. Okay, Rick, if you have any more on that, and same for Jeff, you guys just jump in the forums or jump on one of these calls, and I'd love to hear from you. And that is the forums done, Gideon. So I've got one hand raised. I think it's Anastasia again. So I think you had a couple from the chat room, though, right?
Yes, there are quite a few from the chat room. Shall we do the chat room first before we move on to Anastasia?
Let's do that, yes.
Okay, right. The next question I have here is from John Treby. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Apologize if I got it wrong. The question is, my question is, after some years of selling as an affiliate, starting to realize one needs your own product in the way of ebook or some unique product, what are your views here? Okay. I think the question is about having your own, you know, the value of having your own unique product as opposed to someone else's products. Now, John, if you're listening, you could just confirm whether I understood your question right there.
Sounds right to me, Gideon. I think he just wants to know, you know, do you only ever make money by selling your own products, and is it possible to really even do it just by doing affiliate products?
Right. So John's sorry.
Yep. He said yes.
He said yes. Okay, great. You're on the right track. I can start it off, Yara, and perhaps you can then add your thoughts too. I think both Yara and I will agree on this very strongly, that it's extremely valuable to have your own product that you can promote. And there's more than one reason for that. Obviously, the first reason is that you know, you've created an asset for yourself that you can leverage over and over again once you've created it. So if it's a good product and it's successful, it could provide you with some potential great passive income or semi-passive income in the future. So it's definitely a very valuable thing to have. Another great reason for having your own products is because it does make you stand out as someone who's perceived as an expert in your field. And if you had to compare yourself to someone else who doesn't have a product and you do have a product, you will come across a lot more experienced and a lot more as the expert in that particular field, especially if your product's successful in the marketplace as well. So there's at least two really good reasons for having your own product. In saying that, it doesn't mean you have to have your own product to be able to make money from the internet. You know, there are many other ways that you can do it, and affiliate marketing is a very good example of a method where you can use other people's products, promote their products, and make a profit from that. So, you know, you don't need your own product to be able to make money, but I think it definitely is beneficial for the long term. Yara, I'll hand it over to you if you want to add anything to that.
Yeah, great strategic point of view there, Gideon. I'll give my practical experience with this issue. I've been selling affiliate products longer than I've been selling my own products, but I have done both. And selling my own product has always been more lucrative, and for all the reasons Gideon suggested there. But what will also happen is it's easier to sell your own product because you're basically selling your own credibility. When you do an affiliate sale, you're doing an endorsement of someone else's product. So there's always that element of ambiguity. You know, your audience doesn't know this third party, but they feel they know you. So when you sell your own product, you generally get a higher conversion rate. You know, you can make more money, obviously, because you can have affiliates selling for you. And that's been my experience. That being said, some people hate having customer service, hate delivering product, hate having to do all that part of the business. And they stick just to affiliate marketing and do very well with it. I could, you know, make a living quite comfortably just doing affiliate marketing and not worrying about, you know, what we're doing right now, become a blogger and delivering product. But I enjoy it. So that's the choice I made. And I'm quite happy to continue to create my own product, because there's also that intrinsic reward you get there from delivering something of your own creation. Financially speaking, though, it's always been more difficult to make bigger money in my case with affiliate marketing. But there's lots of examples out there of professional affiliates who make a ton of money, and you know, they're doing easily six figures. Some of them are doing seven figures, and they never have to do customer service because they just sell other people's stuff. So that's a great thing. And I hope that answers your question, John.
John was just asking about how to actually, I think, communicate with us on with his voice. So if you
I'll reiterate that. We've lost Anastasia too, so I hope she comes back if she wants to ask that question. If you want to ask and talk to us live, like we usually do with these calls, you press *9. So anyone who's joining the call, I've seen a few people join late. The call is muted right now, and if you want to ask us the question, you have to press *9. That will raise your hand, and we'll see a little hand icon, which indicates that you want to ask a question. We'll click that hand icon, and then the lady will prompt you that your line is active, and then you can start talking. So maybe we can jump now. I've got a couple of hands up getting into the live calls.
Sounds good.
Sorry, it's Anastasia. Sorry, I'm back, but I can't press *9 anymore for whatever reason.
Oh, yeah.
I'm myself back.
You,
so I'm quiet again.
Okay, we got you.
Okay.
You're clever. You know how to unmute yourself. All right, as Anastasia, I'm going to also mute you there. So, okay, she's muted. And we'll move to this one.
Oh, sorry, do you want me to ask? Sorry, I missed it because I was muting and unmuting while you were talking. So I missed half of your sentence.
That's all right, Anastasia. If you will just mute yourself, I've just unmuted the line for Smith SWA.
Okay, cool. I'm muted.
Hey, Yarrow, it's Simon.
Hi, Simon. How are you?
Very good. From Western Australia, just across the island.
Not too far away.
Yeah, not too far away. I have plenty of questions, but I guess my more demanding one, I guess, is around templates. Mm-hmm. I've heard a lot about silos. Can you sort of comment on that? Is that a worthwhile procedure? That apparently they're saying that you don't have to get as many external links if you structure correctly using a silo and using internal links.
I've actually never heard of a silo, Simon. Can you explain what you're referring to there? Maybe it's another name that I don't know of.
I've seen silos before.
Maybe you can answer, Gideon.
Well, I my experience of it is rather limited, but I did see it with the WordPress theme that I used a wee while ago, and essentially all I did was it would somehow cleverly create a menu structure for all your main categories, if I understood it right, in all your pages, and I don't know what happens behind the scenes, but yeah, it does something with the linking between your pages and posts to increase your chance of getting picked up by the search engines. But Simon, maybe you've got a better explanation for us.
not really.
I can have a go now.
Viewed some videos around this on SEOnetworker.com, and they were suggesting that this is a kind of a leading web 2.0 strategy that Google is moving towards, because it encompasses the more of the social media, taking into account social media.
Okay.
Which is why I came back to the template, because I'm looking to do something with that, but also to encompass a lot more social media interaction on my blog.
All right. Well, I think what we can do, Simon, is we'll definitely have a look into it so we're a bit more aware of what you're talking about. But if it is, as Gideon says, and it's purely an internal structure issue and not referring to external links, then it's never going to be huge as a SEO technique. It certainly helps. It's like having a very good sitemap, essentially. But if you're it sounds like you're talking, it's a lot more than that. It could be some Web 2.0 integration there, and that could refer to incoming links from external websites, which in fact may be a very good thing. So I would like to investigate it a bit more before I talk any comprehensively about that kind of question. So. Do you want to ask another one, since we can't give you a good one on that one?
Okay, great.
Before you do, Simon, sorry, Simon. Before you do, I found the link that I was looking for. The theme that I used, that I got introduced with a silo web structure with, was called Semiologic. So they've actually got a page on there explaining a bit more about that. So if, I'm just posting that link in the chat room there if anybody wants to have a read to get a better understanding of that. And yeah, perhaps we can deal with that some other time just so that we can understand what the issues are.
Okay.
Just before you ask your question, Simon, again, I've just got some people telling me the hand-raising function is off, which could have been broken because of that dropout issue we had earlier on the call. So I'm just going to switch it back on. Simon, you should still remain active, though, so just give me 2 seconds. Okay, so that's back on. Simon, you there? No, it looks like I've lost him. Simon, if you just want to raise your hand again, press *9 and we'll get you active and you can have that bonus question and we'll move on to some other questions after that.
Great.
Looks like, and I saw Mitch in the forum. If you want to try again, pressing *9 and your hand should be working. Yep, okay, Mitch is smiling, so we're all good there. Here we go, Simon's back.
Hello, Yaro.
Hey, Simon.
Am I back again? It's Simon.
Yes, you are.
Oh, fantastic. The other question that I had was to do with, I've had several blogs up for a while, and my Alexa ratings are quite keen on one of them. Under 400,000, actually 374,200, I think. But how does that relate to, you know, traffic? And I don't actually see that there's much page rank there just yet either.
No, but you're talking about that? Yeah, I do have a lot to say about those two things. PageRank and Alexa both are almost useless as gauges for the, you know, the traffic growth of your site. You know, you always want to look at your raw statistics to get that kind of number. Alexa is terrible. I'm always surprised. I used to put a lot of faith in it because it's a great social proof tool, and you have a low number there. People think your site is really highly trafficked. My traffic has largely remained unchanged, yet the Alexa ranking has gone, you know, it's been as low as 12,000, as high as 200,000, and my raw traffic didn't change at all. What the system is, how it's supposed to work, is people who are using the Alexa toolbar are delivering statistics back to Alexa on the websites they visit when that toolbar is active. And that in turn then allows Alexa to somehow, you know, deliver what it thinks the traffic rank for a site is. And it does more than that, but that's the basic principle. The problem with that is most people don't use the Alexa toolbar. I don't. And as a result, they have to very much use aggregate data. And, you know, that's never very accurate, especially with the penetration they have with that toolbar. So I've got a site that's a blog that doesn't have any new content, hasn't had any new content in over 2 years. And it has Alexa ranking higher than my Entrepreneur's Journey blog, which is updated, you know, multiple times a week and has been going for 4 years. So I don't give Alexa much faith at all. If you want to do anything with it, it's okay as a tool or maybe social proof if you're selling advertising. It can be a good feature to promote if you do have a low Alexa number there. But, you know, you can get a little bit excited when the number goes down, but don't give it much weight at all. People are telling me compete.com is actually getting a bit more of an accurate external tool similar to Alexa.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but Google Analytics, that's where you really want to look at your numbers. That's the real stats.
Okay, terrific. I'll look into that. So in terms of a template that's going to supply social media tools and things, is there anything that you could suggest rather than building my own?
Well, I'll hand you over to Gideon for that one. He's more tech than I am.
Sorry, I was on mute there before. Yeah. Simon, sorry. Perhaps you could I could just ask you what in particular are you looking for in terms of social media? What do you want to do?
Well, there seems to be quite a lot of like my blog log, which is the Yahoo one. There's also a Google one where they come up with like a little box that says people that have recently visited. Mm-hmm. And reading. The other one is Twitter.
Right.
Which seems to be...
Okay, so perhaps are you more looking for what's the latest and greatest at the moment in social media and what you should be using at the moment? Is that perhaps more your question?
Well, I'd like to know what is a theme available that's got that pre-installed. Is that correct, Simon?
Oh. Yeah, that's what I'd like.
All right, okay.
I'd like that too. I don't know of any, so...
I don't know of any themes, but I mean, it depends on which particular social media tool you're looking for. And you know, my guess is that a number of them will already have their own plugins for them. I mean, a good example of that is the Sociable plugin that you can install in your blog, and then it allows you to have all the different social media and social bookmarking websites just below your post, so people can bookmark your post if they liked reading it. That's a very simple plugin, an example of social media. So I think if there's anything in particular that you want to see if there's a plugin for it, the best way that I've found is to simply search for the actual name of the...
I don't think you're quite on the question.
Simon's
curious, is there a theme you could get for WordPress that is already using these plugins? So you activate the theme and it's already got a Twitter plugin going. It's already got, related posts, Sociable, all these different, and, you know, maybe Delicious, StumbleUpon, all these different social media tools active within the theme. So you don't have to go and manually install these plugins.
Gotcha. Okay. And then my short answer to that is no, I'm not aware of one.
I guess I'll let you know when I find it, eh?
Yeah, please do, Simon. I mean, the issue you've got with that is all these plugins are independently managed by different programmers. So when they change, unless the person creating that theme updates their theme, it would be very hard to maintain it. So I doubt there'd be something that's, you know, going to cover many plugins, maybe one or two, three or four, if you're lucky. And even then, you know, you've got to hope the theme looks good. So usually nowadays, with, you know, the widgets in WordPress, people are just installing, you know, buffet style, which plugins they like, and then running with it manually. Mm. Okay.
Okay, great. Thanks for that.
No problem, Simon. Thanks for asking questions. I'm going to move on. There's a few hands raised. Diego.
Hello.
Hello.
Diego.
This is Diogo. First, I want to say you guys provide a great service here. Thank you so much. I am become a blogger student, and I'm blogging about biofuels. So my first attempt to monetize my blog will be a paid newsletter. I'm planning to start link baiting, so to start building an audience, and then to offer the newsletter for a trial period, then start charging from people. My business model is Timothy Sykes. I think Yaro did a podcast with him a couple months ago. So my questions are, do you have any tips on how to build a paid newsletter? Does Blog Mastermind cover that?
A little bit. Not specifically a paid newsletter. Obviously, we do cover building a newsletter, and then we also cover creating product. So you could combine the two and you know, you're basically covering that aspect. But I interviewed Timothy, and I know his model. It's a very common model, and it's a really good one if you can show a lot of proof to people through the free content you deliver. You know, it's so good to – and you got to remember with Timothy's model, it's a bit not tricky, but it's a bit relevant to his industry, because he can deliver content that's very current, because we're talking about stock trading. So the faster he gets that information out there, the more relevant it is. So he can charge a premium if people want that information in a, you know, instantaneously versus delayed by a few hours where it might be useless. And you don't have that advantage in biofuels, because people aren't investing money, or they don't need access to your information quickly. So you need to find a different angle to create positioning for what you charge money for. There has to be a good reason why people would pay money over what you give in the free newsletter or the free information you provide on your blog. You know, what I suggest you do with this is, again, as we talked to several other students, try and come up with the main problem you're trying to help people solve. Get into the feet of that target customer And then you'll know what they really want, and then you can craft paid information to deliver and service that need. And you can then provide free information. And I'll take a quote I recently heard from John Reese, and I think he was quoting someone else, where you provide sufficient but incomplete in your free information. So it's good, it's valuable, but it's not enough to get the job done. So they need more. And that's why they then purchase the paid product. And, you know, what we do with Blog Mastermind and Become a Blogger pretty much follows that model. We deliver a lot for free. And, you know, you could get a lot done just following what we give for free. But if you really want the hands-on support, you pay for the private coaching like everyone here on the call is doing. So there needs to be a perceived difference between what people get for free versus what they paid. And maybe, Diego, you can tell me what you think that would be, and then we can keep talking.
Sure. Yeah, no, and on Blog Mastermind and Become a Blogger, everything is organized. Yeah, on my niche, I'm having a problem on coming up with ideas to monetize my blog because there isn't many affiliate marketing things that I can promote. So I'm thinking that I have to promote my own products. So I don't know for sure if I will be able to monetize my blog or if I will just gather an audience and then profit indirectly from my blog.
Well, tell me, what's the main reason people read your blog? Why are they there?
Oh, it just begun, but actually my idea is to provide a bridge between university and people. You know, put things into easy words for people to understand. My initial idea was to provide business information, which is what I'm studying right now in my master's.
Right. Okay. So because of the nature of what you do with your studies, you're going to be privy to, I guess, more information about the subject than the average person will be. So, you know, there is a possibility to, I think a paid newsletter is actually a very good way of doing it. And just being extremely up to date. So if there's going to be a lot of companies out there who want to know about alternative energy sources and where things are going in that marketplace and industry. Uh-huh. And you know, because of your situation, you may be in a position to gather and filter and then distribute that information quicker and in a concise format, and basically do the work for them. So you find the answers and they subscribe to you because you're so, you know, living on the cutting edge of that industry. That's a common model. That's why people subscribe to magazines, you know, really, is because they want the latest news about that subject. So you could go down that path. You may need to, you know, commit yourself for a long time, and you're probably doing this already because of your studies, to staying up to date. You have to read articles. You have to, you know, find out everything going on in your market. And if you can do that and then tell other people about it, you might have a product there.
Yes, it was my initial idea, something looking like a magazine. I have subscribed to a couple magazines. I'm waiting for them to arrive from the mail. A little excited, and well, let's see how things
go. Really see a nice glossy PDF with, you know, a professional magazine layout that could go really well for you. There's a lot of work involved with producing something like that, but you know, you could outsource the design and layout, and you just provide
that's
information.
That's the beauty. Actually, I can also outsource even the content if I don't have the time in the future.
Right.
Good idea, Diego. I've got another idea for you as well.
Please.
Related to the newsletter, there's a gentleman here in Australia. He's a copywriter, and he also has a newsletter that he sends out, a monthly newsletter. The only difference with his newsletter is that it's an actual printed newsletter, but he gains his following through the internet. So he gets people to sign up just like you would normally for a normal online newsletter, but instead of sending them an email, he actually sends them a physical newsletter. And his whole argument for that is that he can charge more for it because it has a higher perceived value. And if you have the right sort of sources to help you produce that physical magazine or newsletter, you know, you can charge more as a result. Of course, it's more complicated and more work to set something like that up, but it could be it could be seen as something that's higher value. People like receiving something physical quite often.
Well, a next step, perhaps.
Yeah, it's a next step, but it's something also to think about. Yeah.
Keep in mind. I like the idea.
If you are just getting started, Diego, these are questions you probably should be asking your audience. So I would recommend focusing on building a free newsletter, building a great blog. Once you've got that audience, you send a survey to them and say, would you be interested in buying a printed newsletter if I charge this price? And what sort of information would you like to see in it? And how often would you like to receive one? And, you know, that would, and maybe even who are you? What position are you in your company? And why do you read my work? And those four questions just there alone are going to tell you so much about the possibility of monetization down that path.
Oh, that's also a great idea. Thanks. Thanks a bunch.
No problem.
Diego.
Okay. Thank you, Diego. Next one, moving down the line. Looks like we have Mr. or Mrs. Unavailable.
Hi.
Hello. Who's this?
Hi. My name is Gail, and I'm actually on the East Coast of Florida now, so I kind of got up at 5 a.m. to listen to this. So I have a question on basically internet marketing, I guess, that would be involved with SEO and Google and things like that. And to give you a little bit of background, I was listening to a call that was an older audio call between Russell Brunson and Brad Fallon, if you know who those two people are, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with those names?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Anyhow, the call seemed to have been about like SEO secrets and things like that, involving Google, obviously. And basically, Brad Fallon alluded to this, and I've listened to a lot of things on SEO and have read a lot of things on SEO. And, I'm not really all that knowledgeable because I'm still pretty much a new person in the industry. But what he seemed to be saying kind of struck me as dumbfounded me that if you have multiple sites, let's say you have a blog or two, maybe in the same or related niches, or you have a main website somewhere else or some landing pages or whatever the case that you're doing, he suggests and he says that Google actually looks at this because they're a registrar, that he suggests that you get different hosts for each domain, register your domains under different names. Because even if you have security on it, like you could buy the security for a domain name, he says because Google's a registrar, Google frowns on that if you have the same name on all the domains and if you have multiple hosts. In other words, we're just going to discount your backlinks and your SEO quality scores and all that kind of good stuff. So I'm wondering if that is true, number one. Have you heard of that? Or is it something Google did in the past and is not doing now? And if it is true, are we all just shooting ourselves in the foot by having multiple websites out there and, registering under our own business names, multiple websites?
That's a good question. I've heard that exact, I don't know if it was between Russell and Brad, but I've certainly heard Brad, and I think it could have been Andy Jenkins talking about that exact issue. It's an interesting one. We can't give you an exact answer, obviously, because we don't know how Google works. No one does really know how Google works. We have these assumptions. But it makes sense to me. If you are trying to game the system in some way or form, you might be setting up multiple websites and trying to make them look independent so you can use them to send links to a website that you want to rank well. And that for, someone trying to get search engine rankings is not that hard to do. So I can't see why they wouldn't do it. As a result, Google wants to assess whether you are trying to cheat by doing so. And using their registrar powers, you're using the same company name, the same phone number, anything that possibly could trigger a duplicate something, then they might slightly reduce the value of a link coming from the websites on those servers. But now here's the caveat. In the grand scheme of things, I don't think it makes a big difference because, my assumption here, especially for us, us normal people, we're not building 1,000 niche websites in different niches and having them all point to maybe 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 other sites, trying to get those ones to rank highly. But, it's just not the kind of strategy we implement. At least I don't think anyone here is doing that. That's either someone who's a serious SEO or a company or even someone in the black hat market might try and do tricks like that. So they're looking for flags and then they'll you know, they'll assess your behavior across multiple variables. And if you trigger enough, you know, red flags, then you're out, I think, and you'll get the heftier penalties. But it's not likely that what we're doing, like I host all my websites under the same name, like all my domain names under the same name, but all those websites have an intended purpose and they are, you know, considered, not authorities, some of them are authorities, but they all have, you know, they're a landing page for a sales process, their blog, something like that. They're not intended to game SEO rankings, and that's why we're not going to get in trouble for it. It's, you know, behavior is, I think, easy enough for a machine to assess to a certain degree, and that's what Brad and Russell are talking about there. But none of the behaviors I think you're doing or any of the students in this program, I don't know for sure, but it's very unlikely that we're going to do enough to warrant a red flag like that.
So if I were doing something like that, I would have, now the Brad is alluding to, I should go out basically and have various different business addresses and business names and so on and so forth to, I guess, kind of fool Google. Is that kind of what he was saying?
You wouldn't be hurting yourself. I think you'd be potentially helping a little bit.
Right.
You'd be covering all your bases, to put it one way or another. Whether it's going to suddenly... Sorry, yeah, it could be very expensive. And you know, don't forget the accounting side of things, too. Your accountant might want to know why you've got 1,000 new companies suddenly or businesses registered.
Right.
So you got to weigh up the value you expect to get in return for actually doing that. And, you know, if you are StomperNet and you've got lots of niche sites, maybe, or not the StomperNet, but the guys running that company, then maybe they're doing these things and they're testing these things, and that's why they can talk about them. But I don't know. Are you doing these things? I mean...
I'm not doing this thing. I just happened to get on this, and it sounded to me like it was an older call. I don't know how old it was, probably a year or two. But it's just something that I know. It sounded like it was a repackaged audio that Russell had put out. Russell was like one of my mentors a few months back, and kind of got involved in some coaching programs with him and so forth. But I was just wondering. I just happened to go through the process of getting a different address than my home address as a business address. And I have a PO box and all that kind of good stuff, a mailbox that I can actually have a physical address for. And so just to put on websites and so forth and for autoresponders, et cetera. And I heard what Brad said and I thought, man, I'm going to have to go out and give me about four or five more. It sounds like, you know, so anyhow, I thank you for your input. I appreciate that. I just wanted to know if that was true or if it kind of like bowled me over when I heard that. So
yeah, listen, it makes sense. You know, there's a lot of things with Google that make sense. You never know for sure.
Well, I think Google ought to be slapped myself every now and then. Somebody else.
Well, all we have to do is stop using it and we'll be fine. But, you know, that's not going to happen. So
right. Exactly. Thank you very much for your input. I appreciate it.
Okay, I think this is Mitch, but we'll see in a second.
Hey guys, Mitch, Chicago, hour earlier than you East Coast guys. So, I got my new sites, or I'm gonna be launching them. I never had a site launch before. Before I just threw my site up and started typing, but I'm actually am gonna launch my new sites, and I'm gonna do it probably this weekend or around then. But what's happened is I got like pretty popular or something, and like all these people want to write for me and do all this stuff. So I'm like, sure, you know, I can't pay you, but you know, come write for me. So I get 12 new articles a day. It's pretty cool. And
awesome.
Oh. Yeah, it's awesome. So I have all this content that I want to transfer over to my new college basketball site. So is Google going to say that that's duplicate content? Because I just went through the whole ringer with them, you know, to get my page rank back. So I don't want to, like, they gave me my page rank back. I don't want to have to, you know, go through that again. Also, before you guys answer the question, the SEO guys, I had a 2-hour conversation with two of the smartest people I know in the whole world about SEO. And they're like, and their bottom line was, how can you optimize something that you don't know what it is, that what they're looking for? That was the whole premise of what they were saying. And
wow.
I'll tell you what, they had a pretty valid point, and they're just like, How would you know? They're like, you just write really good articles, they said, and that's how you got your audience, because they found your articles, they liked what they found, and they stayed. That's all you care about. And everything else will work. They're
sound
like,
advice.
The
stuff, end the call
like,
now.
Yeah, the other stuff, they're just like, you know, you could sit there and they could tell you 100 different things. Not one of them can prove any of it. So, I don't know. What you guys told me always worked, though. So. Well, my other question is duplicate content.
Right.
Sorry.
Mitch, have you duplicated that content anywhere else? Is it available somewhere else but your outside of your basketball site?
No. Yeah, it's on my football site. I've been putting it out on my football site just to try and get some crossover audience, and also just to get my articles out that, you know, kind of like, because I've been talking about football, so I've been doing one football, two basketball, one football, two basketball, because football season's over. But basketball, these are the things about basketball, not as popular as college football, even though there's way more teams. So I'm down to like 5,700 hits a day or something, which it's actually nice. It's relieving, you know, that I don't have all that pressure.
Yes.
It's like, it's almost like a break. And, but the thing is, like, as Diego was saying, it really does fit the Timothy Sykes model, because the point spreads come out so late and they move so violently that people would pay a premium to get those picks fast. You know what I mean? And then I release them out onto the blog as content. So I could just pick like two or three that I have in the newsletter. I do the football because I love it. I'm doing the basketball, I think, because I think I can make a lot of money on it.
At least you're honest.
So, you know, and I have football on baseball, same things going. And
right.
NASCAR, Formula One, International Soccer.
Let me know when you do the pro tennis one. That's the one I'll read.
I will be doing tennis.
I mean, to answer your question, Mitch, yes, there will be a duplicate content penalty risk if you're publishing content over those two blogs. I would suggest, just from this point forward, taking that content you're getting from people and just putting on the basketball blog. And if you want to talk about it on the football blog, put a little summary and link to the basketball blog.
No, the basketball blog's not up yet.
Oh, well, when
you
do
launch it. I'm going to be transferring it over, but it's going to have my football URL. You know what I mean?
What do you mean by that?
Like in Google, because like what you guys told me, you know, I just went into that whole SEO thing, but what you guys told me works. So all my basketball articles are number one in Google, you know. So, but
that's because you're hosting them on a football site, right?
Right, but the URL is my CFB place, and the URL for the basketball is CBB place or something like that. CBB place, the college basketball place. So it's like, it's those articles that I have now, because I want to have content to generate to start off the site. I don't want it to be like a blank place. I want to have like the archives of the back picks. So do I, you know what I mean? I want both. I want to have content, but I don't want them to penalize me for having duplicate. And like, the thing is, it's only going to be like, you know, 40 articles, 50 articles that's going to be duplicate. And then it's like every day, if I'm adding, you know, 8 to 10 articles, it'll be quick that's a really small percentage. But at that point, it won't be worth it, you know, to take a penalty from Google. So, I mean, I know there's not that many other college basketball sites because of the timing issue. So it's like, I mean, I don't think they're going to be able to compete against me anyway.
You know, if this was me, Mitch, this is what I would do, because I'm also kind of lazy. I would keep the ones that are currently on your football site. So these are the basketball articles on the football site that are ranking so well. I would add a link on every one of those articles once you've launched the basketball site, pointing to the basketball site, but not replicating that article on the basketball site. I would start the basketball site with nothing but original content, because it sounds like your content generation machine is quite healthy at the moment. So there's no reason why you can't start day one with lots of fresh content coming out that point forward. That way, there's no risk of duplicate content penalty. All you have to do is go back and modify the articles that already rank well. You're not risking them dropping in the rankings because you're not going to duplicate them. And, that's how I would do it. The alternative, strip them from your football site, put them onto the basketball site, but you're going to lose what they currently have in the rankings for, you know, because they're hosted on this very authoritative football site you've got. Those are kind of like the
two. That might be okay, though. That might be all right. I think that I would rather have them there. It's like the football site was kind of my thing, and I kind of, I don't like those basketball things. You know,
it is a bit of a mixed message. You know, that would make more sense from a branding and, message to market sense. So moving the articles across.
All right, maybe that's what I'll do. That I'll just cleanly move them. Instead of just having them on both sites. I'll just move.
Yeah,
to me, it's not that big of a deal, because I'm fully confident that it's going to be successful either way, you know, because I know it works. And it's like, I think if I have 10 writers generating content, that's really the most important thing. And then
it'll probably
take care of itself. So basically what I told these guys is when we start making money, and they all have faith that, you know, we're gonna, I'm like, I'll pay them based upon the traffic that their articles are bringing in. So then they're saying, well, can't we just write articles now so we have a following, you know, if that point happens in a year or whatever. I mean,
right.
You know, they're like as fanatical about hoops as I am about the football. So
just be careful with that one, Mitch. When, you know, I would recommend having some kind of document to give to these writers so that they're clear on what their expectations are going forward. Because nothing worse than you start making, you know, 10 grand a month from this basketball blog and they see you doing so well. And they want to cut, and then, you know, they want more than what you kind of originally agreed to. If you don't have that document to go back to, it can get messy. So I would recommend
probably good advice.
Yeah.
Like I'm always trusting everybody. All right, thanks a lot, guys. It's pretty exciting.
No problem. Good morning, Mitch.
I think we make some serious money here on these ones. I challenged all the blog mastermind students and become a blogger students, and I'll say it again. I think that collectively as a group, we should set a goal this year for $10 million. And I think we have the numbers, you know, and we have the system. So it's like, I don't see why we can't do it. I'm going to say that I'm going to do a million of it.
And Leslie, well, I'll do my best to contribute to that as well.
Yeah, and Leslie said that he's in too. We got nothing to lose. So
yep.
Just kind of gives us something to shoot for, you know.
I'm in.
All right,
great
good
stuff.
Deal.
Speak to you soon.
We got four.
All right.
All right, guys. Thanks. I'll talk to you next week.
See you, Mitch.
All right. One more hand up. Rob and Joan Stewart.
Hi. This is John from Durban in South Africa. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi. I just want to ask about leaving your website lying in WordPress and how long you should do it while you're busy building and preparing.
Gideon, I can't understand the accent. You can do it.
Love your accent, first of all. Was it Joan, was it?
Joan from Durban in South Africa, yeah. Hoe gaat
het? Goed, dankie. I think we better stick to English here. Joan, I'm just wondering if you could perhaps repeat your question again and just explain a bit more what you mean. I'm not quite sure I understand the question.
I'm busy building in WordPress. How long should you wait before you actually release? I'm still busy putting articles together and trying to fathom out how to put pictures in, etc.
All right. So if I understand your question right, you've set up your blog, your WordPress blog, and it sounds like you've programmed in some articles into the back office of WordPress, and you're wondering whether you should already publish them. Is that your question?
Yep.
Okay. The short answer to that is you can publish as soon as you have content and you're confident that your articles are ready to be published. The sooner you have them published, basically, the sooner you're going to start attracting traffic to your blog. So I can't really see any reason for not publishing it unless you're still in the process of editing the material. But you can start as soon as you have your blog up and running. You can go ahead and start publishing stuff. The neat thing about WordPress blogs is that you can start getting your content on there before you even have your theme fully sorted out or any plugins. You know, you can add all those as you go through the process. And in fact, that's how we run the Become a Blogger Premium program. The first thing we teach is get your blog up and running. Okay, and then we're going to show you how to get the plugins installed, and then we go straight into how to start creating content and just to get that process moving. And then from there on, you start doing everything else in parallel. So I definitely think you can go ahead and get that content out there. What do you think, Yara?
I agree. Just don't publish 10 articles all in one day and then have nothing for 2 weeks. You know, this should be a slow, gradual drip feed of content over a period of time, not all at once in a big bang.
Okay. And the other thing is to get a good privacy policy. Is there any way one could download a privacy policy to add on as a page?
That's a very good question, John. I think the best answer I could give you is to seek legal advice on that. If you're serious about getting something like that, it's probably best to get your own legal advice on that, because the laws change, or the laws are different for each country. I mean, in Australia, it's different to the United States, and it's different to Europe and Africa and so forth. But I mean, if you can also use other people's privacy policies if you think it's in line with what you're doing, and if it seems to make sense. That is a way of doing it, but I mean, that doesn't give you any sort of legal backup necessarily. So I think to tick all the boxes, if you're serious about it, it's a good idea to get some legal advice on that. And something you could do is if it's something that maybe is out of your budget to get someone to start to create something for you from scratch, is to put together your own privacy policy that you've been able to create looking at other people's privacy policies, and then take that draft document to your legal advisor and say, look, this is my website, this is what I'm doing, could you maybe run your eyes over this just to make sure that it's okay and make the changes that's required, and perhaps that way you could save them some time, and so you do all the legwork from at first.
I'll throw in my two cents here too, Joan.
Okay.
I have grown up on the internet like you're doing now, and for the first probably 7 years, I didn't have a privacy policy and nothing bad happened. Now, that's could be because I got lucky, or really it's more a case of I didn't get unlucky. So really, for legal things to happen that, you know, impacts your privacy policy or impact you because you don't have a privacy policy, you have to do something really stupid or get really unlucky. That's my opinion, not my legal advice, of course. Legal advice you'd get from a lawyer regarding this. When I did start a business, I actually was forced to go to a lawyer because I was through this business coaching program in order to get a privacy policy created. And really, I just had what I did at that time was, like Gideon suggested, I just sat down and said, all right, I've read a few privacy policies. I know what people generally write in these things, you know. You just type things like, what I write in my blog, it should not be considered fact, it's not considered legal advice, it's anecdotal, and you just sort of copy the ideas and write something out. And most of the time, that's going to protect you. Once you start getting bigger, then this is when you really start seriously getting legal advice or getting a lawyer to create the privacy policy for you. But in the interest of protecting myself and Gideon, we have to say that if you really want to be 100% sure, you have to go to a lawyer. But most bloggers will never go to a lawyer for their privacy policy. And if you want a generator for that, I think if you type into Google and you type in privacy policy generator, you will find some tools where you type in the name of your company, your name, and then it'll spit out a sort of default privacy policy, which you can cut and paste into your blog if you want to use that one.
Oh, that's super. Thanks. Thank you very much. Thoroughly enjoying it. It's just a pity that I'm so far away and I can't get to people in a heck of a hurry.
Oh, you'll have to come and visit, John. It's Australia is very similar to South Africa, just nicer.
He has to say that, though, now. He lives here.
I believe you sometimes.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks
for your questions.
Okay, I'm not seeing any more hands raised. We've almost hit the hour and a half mark. It's an hour and 20 minutes. Gideon, did we have anything pressing from the chat room that we need to address?
Let me just have a quick look here.
Because there were a stream of questions.
There's a couple of questions here. There's three questions. There's three from Jules. They're quite technical questions, and I'm just wondering, Jules, if you're still on the line, it might be good to get those questions into the forum area, because that'd be much easier to deal with them inside the forum, just because they're a little bit more technical. I think that's probably my best advice. There's a couple other questions here. The first one is from Ian, asking me in particular, hi Gideon, can we hear your views on article marketing as a traffic driving tactic? So I'll give my quick answer, but I think Yara will probably give a more extensive answer. My experience in article marketing is quite limited. I haven't done article marketing for at least a year. During the time that I did do article marketing, I had some mixed results. Some were okay. I got some traffic from some of my articles, but I think it's maybe a strategy that I didn't follow for long enough to see some real beneficial results. I guess it was something that I saw as a lot of work for me at the time, and it didn't necessarily give me the payoff for the effort that I had to put into it. So for me, it wasn't a very effective strategy for what I was doing at the time. And at the time, I was simply just trying to sell an ebook. But if I look at article marketing from a more blogging perspective, I'm not sure if you really need article marketing because your blog is essentially a bunch of articles that you're putting together. So and you wouldn't want to replicate those articles on your blog on other websites, because then you'll get penalized for duplicate content. So I'm not really sure what would be the point of article marketing if you're already running a blog, but maybe my views are not that well developed on that.
Yeah, Gideon, you need to take Blog Mastermind. There's a lesson in article marketing there. So
okay, so there you go.
And I did some article marketing, and if you type into Google or even into the search box on my blog, article marketing, you'll get my write-up about that. And I had mixed results, wasn't a big fan of it, but I did talk about it in Blog Mastermind and suggest the students consider doing a trial like I did, because it can work better in different markets. My market, not so good. Some other markets, very good. It does take a lot of work, and the horrible thing about article marketing, unless, of course, you're paying other people to write, you have to write articles, and you're already doing that for your blog, like Gideon said, so you have to almost double your workload. What I did, though, and what can be a smart way to go about this, is just to rewrite your blog articles so they're different, or even take content from a different source. So, you know, if you write a newsletter and that doesn't get published on the internet, it just goes through email, then you can publish the newsletter content as articles for article marketing purposes. And that way, they're independent of your blog content. So that's one way to go about it. But if you have a Google for article marketing, Yarrow, Y-A-R-O, you can read my article, and I give you the results of my experiment. Not very good results. I posted 20 articles into easingarticles.com and didn't get a huge return on my investment. A lot of spammy sites republished my articles. But word on the street from people who had good results, you really have to get to at least 100 articles within easingarticles.com in order to get any kind of a result that's significant. So having not done my experiment to that point, I can't really say whether that happens or not, but it does make sense to me. So and just while I'm talking, Morgan's asking in the forums, I just had published an article to my blog called How to Make Your Blog Boom Regardless of the Economy. And can I clarify on what the author of that article meant as IP and IPR and how to take advantage of it? That article was a guest article by Shane, who is in the intellectual property industry. And that's what he's referring to, intellectual property rights. Now, the article was a little abstract. The examples weren't great in terms of understanding how, giving a specific example of what he's talking about. He did try, and I prompted him. I actually had him rewrite the article a couple of times to get closer to what he was referring to, because I did feel it was ambiguous. My take on the situation, and this is how it applies to bloggers, we tend to value our sites and our blogs, this case, based on a multiple of the profit or the revenue we generate from our blog. That's usually somewhere within 1 year of profit up to, at very, very, very best, 10 years of profit. And that would mean, you know, the money would have to be coming from your blog on a consistent basis and for the foreseeable future should continue to come. So the person who bought your blog can enjoy a lot of money. But usually the case, on average, people get about 3 years worth of profit as a selling price for your blog if you go sell your blog. So if you're making $1,000, I'll give you a better example. You're making $10,000 a year from your blog, that's clean profit. You probably can get about $30,000 for it selling it. Somewhere between $10,000 and $50,000 will be the average selling price for a blog of that level. Now, Shane's argument and his, I guess the area he's studying is by registering some kind of intellectual property, usually based on a product you sell through your blog. So you're selling a product through your blog, you then register that and get intellectual property rights to that product, you automatically increase the perceived value of the product and can therefore sell your blog and the product you're selling to another person or another company for more because of the intellectual property. So all I can see of it is a way of increasing the value because you own the rights to something for a longer period of time. So it seems more protected, so the competition can't come in necessarily steal your market. But I think it only applies to circumstances where you have the potential to protect yourself, intellectually speaking. This course is a good example. Become a blogger. You know, you can write another course on how to become a blogger, how to, you know, blog mastermind, how to make money blogging, but it won't be written by Yarrow, it won't be written by Gideon. So there's a little sense of there's intellectual property there simply because of our history and our stature on the internet. So if we could find somewhere that we could register intellectual property behind our system, then maybe we can make more money because of that. But, you know, to be honest, I'm a little bit confused myself, Morgan. So I think Shane hopefully will cement his idea more and provide better information and more specific examples of how he's talking about going on about this. And why we're also compelled is because he's talking about selling our blogs for millions of dollars versus, you know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands at the very, very best circumstances. So it is worth hearing about. And that's it. Gideon, anything else we need to address?
For articles, there was one thing that I wanted to mention, and this is something that I'm not 100% sure of, but my intuition saying is that it's not a good thing, and that is using article submission software. I'm not sure if you've got any experience in that, Yara, yourself, but I've done a bit of that, and I can't conclusively say that it's bad, but my impression of it after using it was that it was very similar to spam.
Yeah.
And so initially it looks very promising. You know, the promise is that your article will get submitted to hundreds of different sites by only a press of a button. But then the question is, you know, that's all pretty much duplicated content, and you know, you're just spamming the internet, and so I personally don't think that's a good way of doing it, because my common sense is just saying that's bad. So if you do a search for a certain keyword and 10 websites come up on the first page and they all say the same thing, from a user's point of view, that's not a very good experience. So Google, they wouldn't like to have that on the as part of their service. So I can't see how that is a good thing to use. But that's just my experience.
All right, we've got three hands up, Gideon. So what we'll do is we'll answer these three questions and then we'll wrap up this call. Let's jump to the first one from Candace.
Hey guys, Candace in Arizona. I've been working with a plugin with the WordPress. I think it's called Feed WordPress, and are you familiar with that, or can you tell me anything about that? I'm trying to bring in some news titles or feeds from some local newspapers onto my site.
Okay, I haven't come across it yet, Yara, have you?
I've never heard of it, but it sounds like a way to pull in RSS feeds from other content sources and publish that content on your blog. Does that sound right, Candace?
Yes, that's what it does, but I've had a heck of a time trying to get it to work. So I was just wondering, is anyone else familiar with it or worked with it?
Not that specific plugin, but I know there's plugins that people do use for that purpose. Bearing in mind, though, if you do that, you are replicating other people's content on your blog. So unless you're already trying to, say, feed an audience you have at your blog with some good headlines, mm-hmm. you know, if your blog isn't established yet, you're not publishing original content to your blog doing that. So it's not helping you a whole lot.
So is it more of a service? I mean, how much of a damage will that be for me? I mean, I'm thinking more of my clientele since it's real estate. But if it was more of a service for local news, like a community niche type thing?
If your clients are real estate and you want to grab the latest real estate headlines or data about a marketplace, that's valuable. And you're not replacing the core content of your blog, because I'm assuming you're writing articles as well. So it's worth doing that. If you're having technical problems with the plugin, though, please jump in the forums and maybe you could talk about where it's going wrong, because as Gideon mentioned earlier in the call, it's hard to troubleshoot technical issues on a live call. So, it's definitely possible. There are ways to get feeds from other sites. People set up spam blogs all the time by just feeding other people's RSS content into their blog and just republishing it. It doesn't work very well, but they do it, and they hope they do it enough they can make some money or get some traffic. But it's certainly applicable in your case in a positive way. You just got to find the best feeds and put them in the right place in your site and make sure you're also publishing lots of original content.
Right. Okay. All right. Very good. I'll make sure to bring that up in the pen.
Okay.
Thanks, Candace.
You bet. Great job.
Oops. I cut her off too soon. Sorry, Candace. moving on.
Hello,
can you hear me?
Yes, we can. It's the Dark Monk. Who is this?
That's it, Dummy. It's John Treby. How are you?
Hi, John. Good, thank you.
Hi, John.
Good. You've been very helpful to me in the past with sending you emails and looking after me with lots of problems. But I just wanted to ask a couple of questions, or really one, really. I'm in Australia, so I'm pretty basic and straight into it. I have quite a few, I had quite a few blogs, and I've got rid of them, and I've cut down to two or three. Now, the only thing that sort of interests me, sometimes they're really doing well, and they're really sort of pumping with lots of traffic, and there's some of them that I don't do a lot of work with, they were even better, and then suddenly they all disappear, and I keep putting more content in, more different things. Some work, some don't. And I can't quite work out where the balance is and what I'm doing right or wrong. I think you answer my question on affiliate products that I was trying to sell. I've been messing around with this for sort of, 15 years. And in the earlier stages, it was quite successful. Now things have changed a lot. But I'm finding it the traffic side of it very difficult. One minute I've got it, next minute I haven't. What do you think happens with that? As in blogs more than anything. That's got you.
I'm not entirely sure what you mean by what you said earlier with, if some things are working and then they disappear. Do you mean in search engine results? Is that what you're
saying? No, the search engines are still out there. So say, for instance, I'm putting in, say I've got a dog blog and I'm doing quite well with that. And I also probably sell or extract eBay products to sell as well at the same time. It's doing quite well and everything's fine. Still getting a lot of hits and everything. Then people don't start to buy. Just sorts of, especially in the last couple of months, it just disappeared. The traffic's sort of okay, but then suddenly that disappears totally. And I think I'm putting content in, I'm keep backing up with different things, giving away free stuff, but it just disappears totally. And then it comes back again. I've heard about the Google Sandbox, and I'm thinking, right. Well, am I in there? And yet, when I search for my site, it's still up there.
The likely answer to this is a search engine issue, John. Right. It's probably you are getting, the thing with the long tail, you're ranking for lots of different phrases. So you may find that Google will penalize your site or boost other sites above you. And because of that, lots of different things you rank for drop, and then your traffic decreases for maybe the money phrases. Often there's a handful, you know, it's an 80-20 rule. There'll be a handful of phrases that bring in the buyers, and if that drops, so that traffic goes, then you've lost the buyers, even though your overall site traffic may not fluctuate that much. It's just the converting traffic disappears. To get to the bottom of this, you have to set up within Google Analytics some conversion goals, tracking the unique sources of traffic, and then you'll know where the buyers are coming from. And then if the buyers stop buying, you can look at Google Analytics and see, I know why, because I was ranking number one for, you know, dog food ABC, whatever, and yeah. Now that traffic was 100 visitors a day, now it's gone down to 10. So I need to optimize a bit more for that phrase again to get back up there. Unfortunately, that's a bit technically tricky, and I personally could not do that right now. I would have to go to my tech people and say, can I find that out so I know what's going on? I don't know how you're sitting in that, but that is the way to get the definitive answer to this problem.
I have checked that. What I'm sort of beginning to think is that maybe this world economy problem makes a lot of difference, in the sense that I get a lot of hits, say, on products that I might be selling on eBay, but actually people are not buying. A few months ago, I get less hits and they're buying. So I'm thinking that I think niche ideas seem to be quite special at the time you're doing things. Maybe I've got one that sells ringtones. Now that does quite well, but it's obviously handles the younger generation, which don't really care about money so much. So you also want to be on some of the niche ideas, which I'm learning from you guys as well. It seems to be very important.
It's interesting because you're following the niche marketing style of making money online. You know, you're picking topics for the money, not necessarily because you're passionate about them. So I doubt you're passionate about ringtones.
Well, I'm learning that I think you've got to be passionate about something. But at the same stage, you go off the beat a little bit and you get onto something. You think, oh, well, that might make some money. So you have a go at it. And sometimes it does for a little while. You know,
right.
So you end up ending up doing too many things.
Exactly. And you pretty much summarize where I was just heading with this. Most people with niche marketing, they have a roller coaster ride. And the reason why they have to diversify across so many different niches is because one day one's performing well and then it's not. So you have to have something else to rely upon. Now, if you like living that way, and always setting up a new niche and doing research, it's a fine way to make a living. You know, the philosophy we're endorsing with our coaching programs is build an authority site, build an email list, you know, build some real assets behind a passion or a subject you really care about, and then make multiple streams of income from that one industry. Because, you know, while the individual income streams will fluctuate, your credibility and authority won't. You will always be respected, and you'll be increasing the size of your list. So that's the path I would suggest you work towards, even if it's in one of those niches. You know, if you're finding this, the dog products are great and you're willing to keep working there, start building an email list in that area. You know, start producing more content, start expanding your market penetration by, you know, having multiple ways of getting traffic in that market. And then you can build a mini empire around one area. And that's when your branding starts to make an impact, too. They start to see you everywhere.
It's doing quite well, because I do have a dog walking and dog mining business here in Sydney. But
that's perfect.
What I find interesting, though, and I won't keep you, it's nearly 11 o'clock at night. You guys want to go to bed. I'm in Australian time, sir, is that you get a lot of hits. You've got things that you're trying to sell. And I must admit, in the last couple of months, it has totally changed. And I'm wondering, do you find this, I don't know whether is it to do with this world problem at the moment, that people will go on, have a look, spend a bit of time, look at your products you might be selling and think, well, do I really need that? Do I need to buy that at the moment? So how do you push them a little bit further?
Listen, it's going to vary from niche to niche, but there's no doubt people are spending less money on certain items because they're feeling fear. Simple as that. So, or they got fired. You know, that's a reality situation. So all you can do is hedge your bets and go into markets that benefit from this sort of economic cycle. You know, us in the internet marketing world, where we're selling internet business opportunities, you can often see a spike in this kind of market because people lose their job and then look for alternative ways to make money. So know, it's a good time to be selling make money online products.
But it's a very true comment, because I used to trade the stock market, and I'm finding that I've got some software that I used to play with, and I sort of put that out for a bit, and there's more interest. You know, I'm actually thinking of putting another blog towards that, not to sell a product, but there's a lot of people out there that need some help. That's interesting. All right. Sorry to take your time up. And
no problem.
I'm enjoying all your stuff you're sending me. It's very interesting.
Good stuff. All right. Thank you. And
thanks for your time.
Good night, almost. So we're in daylight saving. We don't have daylight saving, so it's only almost 10 o'clock here. So we're good. But thank you.
We're 10:42.
Thank you, sir. Yeah. 9:42 here.
Thank you. All right.
Good night.
Thanks for your time.
Good night, John.
Okay. We've had someone. No, it's Joan again, but we'll put this unknown person.
Hello. It's a very quick one. As far as I understood, it's not clear to submit the articles to eZone, so I won't do that. But I've submitted three of my articles to a site called eHelium. That's for freelance writers. And basically what they do, they have a contest and you get your stars if your content rates high, like the 25% of all submitted articles, etc. So would that qualify as, well, submitting the same content over and over again and then getting penalized for that as well? And should I stop doing that altogether?
The only question you have to ask is if can Google find that piece of content in multiple places? So if it's on one site, another site, another site, another site, and your blog, then there's a possibility of a duplicate penalty there. The thing is with that, people will replicate your content whether you want them to or not. So what I find with my experience with this, I always are the person to first publish the article. So it goes out to your blog first, and it's, you know, clearly your blog has got all the incoming links, and it's established itself as the authority. It will be flagged by Google as the original source. So even if it gets duplicated, your site doesn't get hurt. If, however, you go out there and republish the article in eZone articles in sites like you're talking about there, there are more chances of Google impacting you. So you're not helping your circumstances by doing that. And the whole reason why you're publishing that content in other places, if it is to help your search engine rankings, you're not. All I can really help you do is hopefully get in front of more people who then read your content and come back to your site.
Yeah, that was the idea, to get people on the side, yeah.
Yeah, you can test this. You can publish content. If you notice your blog is having, you know, trouble getting high rankings, it could be an issue. If you do it and you're just getting lots of nice traffic coming from these other sites, just keep doing it. The general consensus, though, there is a duplicate penalty issue, and you could fall into that trap.
Cool. That's it. Thanks.
Cool. No problem. All right. One more question, and it's Joan from South Africa. Gideon, I'll let you speak first because you speak the same language. And then we'll wrap up the call, everyone. So thanks so much. One more.
Great.
Hi, Gideon. I just wanted to ask, I was with a previous company before I found you guys, I've become a blogger, and I was trying to do work online, data capture, and affiliate marketing. They use things like MegaBlast and that to get your domain out quickly. Is that advisable? And another thing we do have a problem with in South Africa is PayPal. We can pay into PayPal. They do not take money and send it back to us. So what happens is I think ClickBank is going to be the way we have to work, but that's something I'll source on this side. This MegaBlast and that, is that advisable or better to stay away from it?
John, first of all, could you maybe just explain a bit more what MegaBlast does? I'm not familiar with MegaBlast myself.
There are a few of them that they're actually, it was also a teaching program whereby they advise you how to do things and you could get it free, but it's very American-based. You could put in your URL on their line and put a short description of what you're selling or what you're doing, and then trigger about 100 different places and it would send it out as a fast sort of generator into the world. Is it advisable to use things like that, or is it better just to go the normal slow pace, do it one day at a time and let them find you on the SEO?
Well, Joan, I mean, without really knowing the details of how this particular piece of software works, it I mean, it sounds to me like very similar to a spamming type of software, to be honest. But I mean, without me testing the software or having used it before, I can't say for sure. But it's just what it sounds like to me. You know, if there's something like that. Normally with these sort of things, if it sounds too good to be true, it normally is too good to be true. And so I would recommend going for the slower route and a more secure route that gives you that long-term benefits, which is really creating great content for your blog. And so I think one of our other listeners previously said, was it Mitch, that he had a discussion with some of the world's top SEO experts, and they said, look, content, great articles is the key thing. So, yeah, I mean, that would be my recommendation, is to more focus on the long-term type of activities that will bring those long-term benefits, as opposed to going for the quick fix type of solutions that promise a high return very quickly. And you know, especially if you haven't seen any big evidence of those sort of technologies being successful, they do come across quite dubious.
I tried them. I had no results. Hence, I was still shopping around and found Become a Blogger.
Okay.
We're on the right path then.
Yeah, sounds good. yeah, and
we've
just
some good guys out here as well, but it's very limited.
Okay. Well, just to touch on the PayPal ClickBank issue as well, I must say we're very, very impressed with the service we've been getting from ClickBank. They're very, very reliable. They're very responsive with their customer service. And I just realized today that they've actually got a customer service phone line that you can call as well, and I wasn't aware of that. But that basically means you can call them and they can give you an answer immediately if you've got an issue. So that's just fantastic. So for the sort of stuff that we're doing, where everything is digital, I mean, ClickBank is at the top of my list at the moment. So you can't go wrong there.
Thanks.
Okay.
Well, you guys can go to bed now. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Joan.
Thanks, Joan.
Well, okay. All right. That's it, everyone. Thank you very much for all your wonderful questions, both from the forum and the live call. Definitely a different group of people and a few early morning rises in the States getting in there towards the end. The next call is in the teleconference area, scheduled for next Wednesday. I think it's 11, I believe, Eastern Standard Time. And hope to speak to more of you again there. In the meantime, if you want to ask any questions, please make use of the forum. And, of course, Gideon and I check that usually at least once a day, so we can get back to you if you ask us a question, or you can help each other as well, which is a great thing. And that's it. Gideon, any last words before I open up the line to everyone to say goodbye?
No, I think that was a good session we had. Thank you for all the questions. Appreciate you guys asking questions, and it's really nice to be able to help you out. And as Yara says, anything else, go to the forums. The more people that go there, the better. You know, if you do, even if you go there and you're quite new to the forum, feel free to try and help out wherever you can. And I found that the more you help, the more you learn as well. So it's a great place to hang out.
Okay, I'm going to open the line, which is our tradition at the end of the call, and you can just say goodbye or thank you, whatever you like, and then we'll end the call. So thanks, everyone. We'll speak to you all next week.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, guys. That was great.
Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thanks from WA. Cheers.
Hi from Florida.
Cheers, everyone. The moderator has disconnected. The call will now end.